If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's also a point system where you have to earn a minimum amount of points in order to be able to get to be eligible to apply.
Amazing. And one last question. So this officially makes you guys the most sustainable fashion week in the world, right?
Well, you said it, Monica.
Yeah. No.
Hi, I'm Cami Charrier.
And I'm Monica Ainley. And you're listening to Fashion No Filter,
where we sit down with some of the lead creatives, strategic thinkers, and emerging talent around us to interpret the ins and outs of the fashion industry today.
Hello, Fashion No Filterites, and welcome to our second ever live episode recorded in front of a fantastic audience in Copenhagen. I want to start off by thanking the Academy. No, just kidding. But congrats to Fashion No Filter crush Joaquin Phoenix for last night's big win. That's a man whose ideas we can get behind. No, but I do want to thank our sponsors of this episode, Vestiaire Collective, for making it possible. Leading secondhand luxury fashion retailer Vestiaire have made it their mission to promote vintage fashion as a wonderful means not only of renewing one's snazzy, unique wardrobe, but of promoting sustainable practice in fashion while doing so. Our guest today is Danish style icon Pernilla Tesbæk. For those who have been living under an Instagram rock, Pernilla is a highly respected influencer and businesswoman. We were very excited to speak to this fashion all-round MVP, who we feel is one of the leading style authorities in her country and worldwide, and is also an old friend of ours. Okay, enough chat, let's get to the interview. Actually, wait, one more thing. For those interested in sustainability, which I hope is all of you, stay tuned at the end of the episode for a special announcement from the CEO of Copenhagen Fashion Week. All right, let's get to it.
They are here today, and with the lovely Pernilla, who's definitely very local, but a big international profile as well. Mm-hmm. I'll let the girls talk now.
And we're very sorry that the bags under our eyes are not from Vestiaire Collective. No. Just part of our Fashion Week.
Thank you so much, Lynn. And thank you to the whole Vestiaire team. And thank you to Pernilla for agreeing to join us for this talk. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm a little rusty, as you hear. This is not my normal voice, but it was a little leftover from a lot of work recently. So
you've been running around. You are kind of, well, we think of you as one of the, if not the, style authorities of Copenhagen. And you're also kind of one of the ultimate fashion slashies of our generation. I know you're a stylist, you've been a model, you're a mega influencer.
I'm a mom.
You're a mom of two. How do you like to introduce yourself?
I would introduce myself. I'm 35 years old. I have two lovely boys at home. I'm married to the most amazing man. I work with an amazing team at Social Sue, and then I have my own platform where I can kind of get out with all my creative thoughts and inspire a lot of people out there.
But you started out, how did you first get into the fashion industry?
I started out as a model, as you mentioned, when I was around 14, 15, I went to Paris, actually, quite crazy. My mom let me go for 3 months during a summer holiday on my own. But that was kind of my intro for the fashion world. And every time I went on set, I was like the annoying model that had like an opinion about what I was wearing, because I always had like, maybe we should do this. I think that was kind of like my way into the whole, you know, the sneak of fashion. And I've always been inspired by fashion. My mom, my grandmother gave me a sewing machine when I was a little girl, and then I've been experimenting with a lot of weird clothes that, I mean, I always felt quite unique sewing something together. And I'm not sure how it actually looked like. My mom was always quite, you know, surprised, and she was like, oh, you look smart. And I knew that, oh no, that's a bad word. But I think that was kind of my way of getting into fashion and being interested.
And Copenhagen, it really is a destination now for the fashion set. We've seen so many girls come internationally to join the shows this week, and that's been the case for a few years now. I think it's kind of like how French girls, you know, we often say have that je ne sais quoi. There is something about Scandinavian girls. Can you put your finger on what that is, why people are so interested in Denmark as a city?
I mean, I wrote a book some years ago where I interviewed Leandra Medin, also called Man Repella on Instagram, if you don't know her. And we were talking about the fact, like, what is it about the whole Scandinavian look? And that was, I mean, a few years ago. She was like, it's probably the only, you know, the only girls that can pull up a pair of sneakers and still look chic, because at that time sneakers was something you didn't even see in the fashion industry before or during fashion weeks, and it just looked cool pairing it with a dress or something, and that at that time was something super new and hot. It's a way of paring things down. I mean, if you look around, you have like the way of the Italian looks, the way of the French girls look, and we always kind of like tone it down, and it's something where you can kind of you can take that look from the street and put it into your own wardrobe. And I think people like that they see something that they can actually, you know, wear themselves. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem too complicated if it looks comfortable. And I think that's kind of the trick that a lot of girls took in, and it inspires people because you can actually, you know, wear it yourself.
I always saw it as very, as you say, pared down looks, but incredible jewelry.
Exactly. I mean, I've always been a fan of details. I think that's kind of my thing. And of course, I mean, jewelry makes a look super personal, and also just small details. Like Hannah's wearing a really cool, color on her knit, or like adding these small things that kind of makes you stand out a bit, because otherwise it, you know, you look like everyone else. So it's all about making your look unique. And I think that's what adds the trick to it.
So attention to detail, that's a good tip.
Yeah.
Copenhagen is also a leader in fashion sustainability. I know I was at the Climate Summit last May, and I was incredibly impressed by the turnout and how implicated the Danes are in this discussion. Help us out. Our industry is a bit of a crisis mode because we are a large polluter.
Mm-hmm.
But what are some tips as to how to live in a more sustainable way that Danish people like take as, you know, the normal way of being, or even just in a fashion frame, like what can our listeners do to start to make better decisions in their daily life?
I think, I mean, in general, circular fashion is key.
Yeah.
I mean, looking at my kids to take them out, for instance, I know it's not something that you might find that interesting, but I mean, everything that my oldest son is wearing is going down to my youngest son. And whatever they don't wear anymore, we give them away to families that actually, you know, they can't afford that clothes anymore. So I kind of feel like it continues to be out there. But for myself, the older I've become, and after becoming a mother, I'm of course more aware of like the future for my kids. I want them to live in a world where you know, I can also be a role model for them, and how they can grow up and seeing that their mother and father is actually aware of what's going on. So I'm super, you know, aware of whatever I put into my wardrobe. I want to have longevity in everything that I do, and actually for the time being, I'm more aware of having, you know, taking old things out so I feel more unique in whatever I'm dressing in. Because today I'm, for instance, wearing a pair of jeans that I had for 15 years, and my jacket
and it has a hole in the bum.
I have a big hole in my butt,
like this big. It's not a small hole.
It's a big, and that's why I'm wearing this old Celine blazer as well. And the more you kind of, you know, you can add small things to it to feel more refreshed. But I mean, for me right now, I feel more unique pulling things out of my wardrobe that I mean, a lot of other girls are not wearing. wearing. And then it's the small details on this jacket that makes it fun, like the gold button details. I mean, I just think that you invest in pieces that has longevity, and I think that's the most, you know, that's key to everything.
So I have a controversial question for you, and it's controversial because of our careers, mm-hmm. but as influencers, we often get accused of basically promoting an industry and being a huge part of the problem of, of creating like constant desire for consumerism, etc. But I'm also aware of the fact that you in particular, I think, are a trendsetter, always have been, and not because you necessarily want to set trends, just because you put things together in a way that then people copy. And I'm wondering whether you sometimes feel pressure to change things up, because once you've come up with something that you think is new and innovative, suddenly everybody else is doing that.
Yeah.
And so you have to change this up. So it's a catch 22 in a way, because if you start like what we're trying to encourage people to rewear things, et cetera, but at the same time, obviously a lot of people are looking at what you're doing, including brands, who are then copying your looks and selling them to the masses, which I'm sure creates something in you that makes you want to do things differently and change things up. So I'm wondering how you deal with that and what you say to people when they sort of accuse you of not being sustainable enough.
You know, it's a major problem, and I'm dealing with it every day, and I'm trying to, you know, push myself every day in a new direction, but you also have to hold on to your own style and what you think is key in your wardrobe. I mean, it is a problem, and that's why I look into it's a problem. Like, you want to feel unique, you want to feel special, you don't want to look like a clone. So I mean, for me, it's actually pulling out some vintage pieces and like trying to pair them in a way that it's not as easy to 100% copy, but still a lot of women out there will be inspired by the way you style it, and I think that's important. But I mean, it is, I mean, I don't have the answer yet. I mean, because it's right now it feels a bit overwhelming to kind of, I mean, I have like, besides I have my work, I have my family, which takes 99% of my time almost, so, and I don't sleep. I mean, it's tricky to get the inspiration that I used to get, and being on the streets and looking at what all the young girls are doing, because of course they inspire me as well as everyone else. But it is tricky. I mean, and because you kind of put out everything that you do, like every day there's a new something, it is tricky to kind of not, you know, push consumers to buy something.
But I want to bring up your jeans that you're wearing today, because you were like, when you go out here, you were like, there's rips in my jeans and everything, but they're so cool. They look great with this blazer. You've obviously worn them into next year.
Yeah.
But they still feel fresh. And I think that people like you showing how to restyle things constantly, I think we need to get our audiences used to this, because I have publicly lamented the fact before, actually in French, but I do think we have a bit of a problem. I certainly notice that 50% of people less like a photo if they've already seen a key piece, right? Like, people want to see newness,
new stuff,
on Instagram. And that is like a psychological problem that our industry has that we need to start moving past, with people like you showing how to wear, you know, classic with a twist.
But I actually disagree with you on that.
Okay.
Because I feel like a lot of girls actually likes something that is more simple. Okay. I mean, the simple things, like the overstyling is just too much. You see it everywhere. It's like, you feel like you can't really, because it's not natural.
Yeah.
I think people are relating more to natural things now. They act really much to videos. Yeah. I've been doing some videos lately where I'm trying to, you know, how can you style this thing in two different ways? How can you kind of rewear your wardrobe in different ways? And I mean, I'm pulling out old stuff that I still wear, and I really want to encourage other people to do the same. Yeah. And I don't really care that, I mean, of course I want to feel unique, and I mean, whatever you know, it could be over just a little hairstyle, it could be a little hairpin that can make the difference.
Yeah.
But I mean, I really want to encourage people to kind of do the same thing. I've been researching also a bit about it, and I mean, every time I wear these jeans, it likes a lot. I mean, because it's just a vintage jeans, and everyone can relate to it, and they're like, where did you get those vintage jeans? I'm like, they're 15 years old. I mean, but you can probably go to a vintage store and buy them for 100 kroner or something. So I kind of disagree on that. But
well, I think it's interesting that you're saying that through a video angle where you're giving it a new lease of life.
Yeah.
In terms of relatability as well, I think that's an inspiring idea.
I mean, I hope that it will encourage others to do the same.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I had actually a lot of girls texting me recently being like, so their New Year's resolutions for 2020 was, we're not going to buy anything new. Everything we're going to buy is going to be secondhand. And I find that super, super interesting. And I'm quite interested, like, I'm going to go to those girls that in a few months and be like, so did you actually purchase anything yet that was new? Because it's a really difficult thing. I mean, I think all girls can relate to, oh, it's Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
We are going out. Right, and we're wearing the same top again. And how, like, I'm in the same issue every weekend. Like, I've been wearing the same, like, Wolford body stocking underneath the blazer like a million times, and that's like my go-to thing, because then I feel a little feminine and I can feel a little boyish too, and I'm not too cold, and wearing jeans that I've been wearing the whole week. I mean, and you feel a little boring, but you feel comfortable. But I think that's the fact where people are like panicking that Friday afternoon at the office. They run into like high street stores finding that little skirt or dress or something, and then they're like, yeah, I feel super sexy tonight, and then it ends up like in the back of the closet.
One second hit, isn't it? You feel exactly. good for 5 minutes, and then you look at it in the morning, and you're like, what am I going to do with that?
Exactly.
Yeah. It's about trends as well, which is fair enough. But so how do you, let's talk about wardrobe detoxing, because I know that my husband is beside himself, like about to sell everything. I think he's probably doing it while I'm in Copenhagen. He's like, we need to get the clothes out of here.
Oh, no.
How often do you do this?
Can I just say, Monica like got convinced him to give the bigger room for the clothes, so they have their bedroom hilarious. Is the small room.
No, because I used like other emotional, psychological ideas about that room, but right now it's just full of clothes.
No.
And he's like, but so he's very pleased about Vestiaire.
Yeah.
We've talked about this already, about Mark's
passion
for
Vestiaire. He's addicted, yeah. He loves Vestiaire.
Anyway, how often do you do a detox of your wardrobe, and how do you decide what to get rid of?
So our wardrobe is actually quite small, which may come as a surprise, but it is quite small. Every time I take something in, I take something out. And it sounds, I don't do it by the minute, by the book, but I do a detox every time I've been like throughout a busy period and I didn't have time for it. I have a certain amount of hangers in my wardrobe, and I know if there's no hangers left, I have to kind of like do something about it. I actually, you know, throughout fashion weeks and stuff, I borrow so many samples. A lot of the things I'm wearing is not even clothes that I own, but something that I've borrowed from the brands, because I mean, I don't want to overbuy stuff feeling unique throughout fashion weeks or something. I would rather buy that two things and then I'm happy for the season.
I think the interesting thing about that is that for a few years, that was a privilege that only fashionistas, girls like us who had the privilege of working within the industry, benefited from. But now there are more and more platforms where you can rent.
Mm. What was that exactly. app you were just talking about? We've already talked about it on Fashion No Filter.
Rotate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and there are loads. My Wardrobe, I mean, there are lots. Like, you can, I think that's the other thing, because there are certain things that you don't want to commit to buy. If you're looking, for example, for an insane Chanel bag that you're going to keep forever, maybe Vestiaire is the perfect place to shop, because you know the quality is going to be controlled. Mm. You know that everything that you find on there is top, top quality. And I find that very important if I'm going to be making a vintage purchase, because I don't want to be tricked into getting something that's not beautiful and, yeah, well kept. But if you are going to a wedding and you don't want to maybe wear the same dress you've worn to three other weddings, because you know it's going to be the same people there, and you want to stand out because you do feel good when you're wearing something different, maybe rent something. The other trick also is to go and borrow
Rent the Runway.
There's one called My Wardrobe HQ. There's a lot of these things popping up, but I think the interesting thing is that there are many ways in which we can turn our wardrobes into a more circular economy. Kind
also
of.
Borrowing from friends. Yeah. Like, I know it sounds crazy, but my friends and I have a real shifting wardrobe situation. And I mean, Kemi and I share a lot of clothes, and I wish we lived in the same city.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I had to attend a funeral over Christmas, and I thought about going out, and I didn't have anything appropriate with me, an all black outfit that was going to work. And I thought, should I go and buy something? And I was like, no. And I went to Monica's and I borrowed a beautiful all black ensemble, and then I gave it back to her. And I think that's sometimes something you need to think about. Like, you don't always need something new. Friends around you will have a lot of the things that you need and actually borrowing. The only thing I don't lend anyone are my jeans, because I think, like what Pernilla was saying, like they kind of take the shape of your body.
Yeah. Totally.
And I don't want anybody to like turn them into a different shape, because I think they're so important. Mm. Everything else I'm happy to lend, but not my jeans.
No, actually, I think the issue right now is that our generation have been growing up with this overconsumption, mm-hmm. but the younger generation are much more aware. And I actually think we should all look into what they're doing as well. I think they're much more aware of what's going on than we are. Mm-hmm. So right now we have to make an action, because we're the ones setting, you know, the bar of, you know, how you are looking like when you're in your 30s or in your 20s. I mean, so whatever you say with, you know, we borrow from friends, we all did that when we were younger. I mean, maybe we should just start to continue doing that. Mm. I mean, it's not like a bad thing of borrowing something if you're, you know, if you can keep them clean and not destroy them completely, even your jeans. I think we should kind of look into what the younger generations are doing right now, because they actually have something really, really unique and important.
Great
on their minds.
Yeah. I'm loving the graffiti here in Copenhagen. And last night on the way to Gani's show, I noticed a massive Thunberg written on a wall.
Putting on.
And I was like, wow, like we are. But it's amazing, because that's, I mean, she's a huge
inspiration.
And inspiration yeah. here in yeah. a way that she isn't necessarily quite yet in other countries. And I think it's, yeah. I think that her generation, we do need to put a lot of faith in them, as you say, and follow them. Can you inspire us a little bit? Because we know you have a very good Chanel vintage collection, mm-hmm. but what was your last vintage purchase that you were proud of?
My last friend I added, it was not a Chanel bag, it was more a Kelly bag. Her name is Kelly. She's brown and a little caramelish, and she has golden details. She's a little rusty today, but she's delicious, and she's suits well into my beige universe.
She goes with everything.
Yeah, she goes with everything. She's sweet.
Do you have concrete tips for people who are looking to buy something on a site like Vestiaire Collective? I know like there's a lot on there. How do you sort of sift through all the things that you see, all the treasures on there, and how do you decide when you're going to make a purchase?
Or even like in a vintage store physically, yeah. like this kind of applies to
it
all.
It can
vintage
be overwhelming,
shopping.
I think for a lot of people.
Yeah,
I mean, I find it as overwhelming to enter an H&M store. Mm. I mean, I don't know which way is the direction for the kids, and I mean, there's like this so much going on. I think, I mean, because I would consider myself as a nerd, I am kind of aware. Like nerd within fashion, maybe general a nerd, but I mean, I'm very passionate about fashion, and I know, you know, specifically what I would love to see if I've seen a, you know, an old Prada piece. I mean, from a runway, I have an idea of what I'm searching for. I mean, that's my kind of approach every time I enter a store or when I'm on Vestiaire Collective or anywhere else. I mean, I have like, okay, jumpsuit, and then I'm like, trying to figure out black, okay, that's easier. And then it comes like maybe 100 selections off, and then 36, my size, great. And then it kind of makes it easier than actually going into a store. So for me, because I have kids as well, it's like my go-to thing is I'm on an app and shopping. That's like the only thing that like after 7, kids are sleeping. I have like 1 hour downtown and Philip is perhaps working or something. And then I can be sitting being like, oh, is there anything new that could be interesting? Or what could inspire me to, how can I style this in my own wardrobe? I mean, I find inspiration from a lot of women out there and a lot of old archive pictures. And then I kind of put it together for something that I would find on secondhand or something.
Do you want to tell us who your favorite people to follow online are?
Especially if you have good tips for archive photos without giving away all of your secrets.
I actually think sometimes I don't know how to say it. I'm saying fashion gone rouge.
Yeah, fashion gone rouge. Yeah.
Sometimes they find like funny, you know, old looks that I really like, or because I'm not all about the fashion, I'm very much into interior as well, mm-hmm. and I kind of find a lot of parallels between what I really like with interior and as well as in fashion, having those different materials mixed together. It's the same thing I love in my home. So I kind of like those accounts where it's not 100% fashion, but something where it's a kind of a big, you know, mess. And then the colors are the same things I like. So that's probably one of the accounts that often I end up going to and inspiring
it's
me.
That's a really nice account. I've actually been following it. Used to be a Tumblr.
I'm sure you're aware. I know.
Yeah. I've been following it for years.
Showing our age.
Fashion Garbage. But your home is very beautifully curated from what I haven't ever been there, but from your Instagram.
Come by.
Yeah, we'll come after. But thanks. But I think that you have developed, it seems almost as much of an eye for homeware as you have for fashion. Did that come later, or was that just part of your general aesthetic culture from the outset?
I don't want to jump in. It definitely didn't come later. I remember coming to your house years ago when we were much younger. And your house, back in those days, we were definitely not showing our houses on Instagram, so it wasn't a showing off thing. And your house was perfectly curated.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you.
I remember.
What year are we in here?
This was before Pernilla's 30th. It was like six years ago. Do you remember? Like I came and stayed with her for a few days, and then I came back a few months later for your 30th, which I remember very well. We were called on Instagram back then at Camtiox and at Look de Penny.
Yeah, I remember.
Those were the days. We met because we were both going through a really bad breakup. And we like started sharing stories, and like back then, like it really wasn't this huge community of people that traveled. There really were not that many people that went to the shows, and it was so nice having a friend, someone to chat to.
Yeah, because it becomes quite lonely sometimes, and you don't really have anyone to share it with. Nobody really understood what we were doing. I mean, that's been the struggle for Barbara, Hannah, and I for a long time, to convince people what is social media and what are we doing in Social Zoo. But I mean, I was living in my brother's apartment that I rented from him, and I remember you coming, crashing my home, messing everything up.
Oh.
And it's become so surprised. No, I've been very passionate about furniture and in like home interiors for many years, and that's definitely also something that I love in our recent home that we just actually sold. So we're gonna spend 2020 on building a new home, and
congratulations.
Yeah, it's super exciting. Like that's kind of my mission this year, that I'm gonna be, you know, looking into what kind of color for the walls, what floor, like it's that all nerdy details that are also really nerdy again. But I mean, I'm really passionate about interior design.
And do you also look for secondhand pieces when you're doing interior?
100%.
Okay.
Yeah, I do. Because it's also about, you know, I have a thing for chairs, and a lot of my chairs are vintage, or actually something that I, you know, came from my grandmother's house. But I really like the idea of that it's worn in a bit. It kind of, the leather of the things are just a little more nice, and it doesn't feel as cold, because it's all about hygge, as you heard. It feels like more homey and something that is not like it. I don't want my home to look like, you know, an exhibition. I want it to feel nice and soft and cozy, and you just want to be there.
Yeah,
and
vintage gives that feeling.
It does.
It?
Yeah,
actually, can I ask you to give our audience some tips for good vintage shopping websites? Because, like, I know that I'm obsessed with this French site called Celancy. Mm-hmm. They have really great like old chairs and stuff. Do these Danish ones deliver abroad? Not really.
I mean, I did a really, really stupid thing years ago. I bought a couch from New York from the line, and after that, it was such a mess getting it into the country, and also the whole, you know, thinking about the sustainability about getting that in. It was just a bit silly. But I do look into a lot of auctions, because I feel like when I'm looking into auctions and bidding there, I feel I can get a better bargain on it. So I don't particularly go to a specific store. I do bid on it, and then we're like putting the clocks on every time, like these chairs, okay, now alarm clock.
Amazing.
And yeah, it's that nerdy, you know.
Keeps it exciting.
Yeah, it does.
Bit of and suspense.
Yeah, you kind of feel like you did a bargain on something when you get it for a good price. So that's normally what I do, and that's, you know, all the auction houses here in Scandinavia.
And where obviously, sorry, what?
Kemi has a massive problem where she can't buy a sofa.
Oh, yeah.
God. Can you tell her about
the classes you showed me yesterday?
No,
which
guys,
is
like, oh no, I have a sofa problem. I don't know what it is. I just can't. I can't get my
No, but to
together.
Be fair to you, it is hard, because if you buy something too cool, you get sick of it. Like mine was a bit too cool.
It's not that. It's that it takes 8 weeks to arrive, so it's a big decision, and then it doesn't fit, and then when it comes, it's smaller than what they said, so you've got a miniature couch.
Like you and your boyfriend, like
Honey, I Shrunk the Couch. Like, it actually, I bought this amazing, beautiful couch from Pomono, secondhand, stunning, and it arrived, and it was tiny. It was like it was built for like a child, and I couldn't understand.
You have to measure.
No, I did. There was a mistake on the site, and I was so cross because I waited for it to arrive, and then it got there. And when I sit on it, I look like a giant.
And that's so funny.
I mean, I just look very tall and modelly because it just makes me look.
No,
very
but this does happen. We had to take the door off the hinge, the door to our apartment off, the other night to get in a new vintage desk that, like, I'm so pleased about, but I refuse to send it back. So you can take doors off of hinges, by the way.
Well, we don't have that problem because I have a mini couch. But speaking about your home and how well curated it is, how do you draw the line on what you share and don't share? Because I'm sure you've noticed that with Instagram, as things have progressed and people have got more sort of used to us being able to see other people, the appetite for more of a voyeuristic, you know, personal touch on what you're sharing has been growing. So I wonder how you decide, you know, you obviously have two young boys and a beautiful home and a lovely husband, how you draw the line between what you like to share and what you're not comfortable with putting out there.
I mean, it's a really difficult fine line, I should say. I mean, I don't know. It kind of comes naturally for me what I want to share and what my mood is. I don't have like a certain rule of, no, I'm not doing that, I'm not doing that. But of course, there are some things that happens when you become a mother that you feel like another responsibility of not standing in front of a mirror and taking a selfie being half naked or something. You just feel like, maybe that's just because I'm 35 or I don't know, but there's just something that happens within you where you're like, I don't want my sons to be bullied in school because their mom is like doing something that is not appropriate. So you kind of feel like another responsibility within them and also what you share. And of course, stories is something that goes away, but I've also noticed that a lot of people screenshot the stories and regram them afterwards. So, I mean, it's a weird, like, I'm like still working on that defined line. It's not as much only for myself, but mainly for my kids. Philip is like, oh, you know, you kind of know when he's not there around. But my kids definitely, it's tricky though. And I cannot, like, I don't really have the right answer yet. But it just, when it feels natural, that's kind of like, you know, when I'm in doubt, I don't do it.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the thing.
Yeah, instinct.
You kind of know.
You kind of know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I go against my instinct and the second it goes up, I delete.
Yeah. We all kind of know that feeling.
I think we're probably going to wrap up this part because we're going to have some questions from the audience, which we're excited about. But Pranila, it seems like there's nothing you can't do. You've done TV presenting. You're on the cover of Elle. You're a stylist. You're a mom. When will there be a brand with your name on it, or is that never?
I mean, we recently talked about it. Right now, I feel like there's like a million of brands popping up everywhere, and I love that a lot of people out there feel inspired to create their own brands. But I also feel like it's, for me right now, it's a lot. I mean, it feels like there's so much popping up everywhere and everyone wants to show something that is their own. And some have something that is, you know, like a voice out there too, or something a bit more niche. But I mean, right now I'm very happy that I haven't been doing something for myself yet. And if I would do, it would be something with a more sustainable mindset to it, or I have no idea yet. I mean, it's been back and forth so many times, but I feel like it's more unique to not do it than to create something.
I agree. Good answer.
Yeah. That's kind of it right now for me.
Thank you so much. Being so open.
And so sorry I sound so rusty. No, I mean, it's a very sexy ad to it. But,
it's very sexy. My voice is like that every day, so hopefully it's okay. Guys, does anyone have a question?
Yeah, hi, my name is Clara. I'm from CBS Fashion Society. And we're really wondering that Fashion Week has been kind of getting a negative rep lately. And of course, Copenhagen Fashion Week is getting a positive rep because it's kind of the sustainable fashion week of the world. But how is your response to fashion weeks around Europe? Do you think they should be cancelled or not? Or how do you foresee changes coming up in the Fashion Week that they have to adapt to this more sustainable vision?
You can start.
Well, we did. Well, I mean, we just spoke to Cecily Thorsmark, the CEO of Copenhagen Fashion Week, just before we had Pernilla on, and it'll be in this same episode about the announcement the other day that Copenhagen is taking these extraordinary steps towards making this really, by all accounts, by far the most sustainable Fashion Week in the world. But she did speak about, you know, how hopefully this will inspire, if not push, if not embarrass other, to put it bluntly, other fashion weeks into it.
And it's our job, I think, as the tastemakers and the content creators and the people that are attending these shows. And we, Monica and I, also interviewed Alex Dobitak, who's one of the main people who puts on, who produces these shows. I think it's our job to put pressure on the brands to change things and not say we won't attend, because obviously like that's not necessarily the way to do it. But I always think when people accuse me of being an industry that's so polluting, I say it's not a good idea to walk away and turn your back. It's much better to stay and plant a bomb in the middle rather than be, you know, say, right, you know what, I can't deal with this, it's too negative, I'll let everybody else manage this.
We were talking about that with Brian as well in another recent interview. Brian Boy, you know, he was talking about somebody who had really turned their back on the industry and then come back and complained about it. And we were saying, you know, it really feels like the best way of changing things is from within.
Yeah,
it is 100%.
And it's our job and your jobs. I think the way that brands change is when you ask for change. So in the same way as like when people say like with elections, you know, write to your politician, we can do the same thing with brands. If you see that a brand is still like giving out plastic bags with that, with when you make a purchase, if you see that like the packaging is out of control when you receive something, if you think that someone is doing like just not making it right, tweet, DM. Yeah,
but it's not like, it doesn't need to be like aggressive, crazy cancel culture stuff. It just needs to be, you know, it's just a little message.
Love your
brand. I respond super well when people who I don't know are like, you know, love following you, but I did notice that in this inspiration photo, I remember this was like 2 years ago, but there was a plastic bag. Maybe you should think about that. And I really did think about it. And I was really happy. And I said, thank you so much for, you know, because...
I mean, I also think I was just in Paris for Couture and I had some meetings with different retailers. And they were also asking questions about this. And I think if we can, I mean, from the inside, encourage them with like the small things. I mean, I was at the summit, not this year, but last year, where I saw this amazing packaging you can like reuse, not paper, but it was kind of this, I think it was made of bamboo or something, and you can sip it and you can reuse it over and over again. I was like, I said to this brand, being like, maybe that's the solution. Can you be the front, you know, the frontiers of this? I mean, that could be your thing, because that would kind of differentiate you from all the others. And she was like, yeah, maybe that's going to be something. And I mean, perhaps it's not going to be, but I think it's also our job to kind of inspire all these, you know, insiders on these brands to think differently, because when they hear it from a voice within the industry, they feel more safe about going that direction. And I think that's, you know, that's the way to go.
Thank you. You can ask us like what our favorite hamburger is or something.
Not allowed to eat red meat, Monica. Bad for
no,
the planet.
But see, I think that like this kind of extreme stuff, actually, I think that you are allowed to eat red meat. You just have to be aware and conscious. And I think we have to not overcorrect. Otherwise, everything's just
I would actually argue that eating red meat is actually one of the most positive, like not eating red meat is one of the most positive changes on the individual level. You can, doesn't mean never eating it. I think anything extreme is never going to work, but maybe thinking about the only times that you do have it is when you're in a local restaurant that is, has sourced it. Like
local, organic.
Exactly.
Because there's also, you know, the farmers that are trying to sell their red meat.
But there's so much into this discussion that we can get into.
Oh,
the whole health
on forever.
Issue. I mean, like it's also really unhealthy not to eat the meat.
Exactly.
And we are going to see within the next decade so many diseases coming from people that are only eating plant-based.
Yeah. And I think it's, I also think, I don't know how you do with your kids, but I think that it's also important to give new generation the choice to...
100%, yeah.
You can't just like impose that on kids. And, well, a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Veganism.
No, we don't. We give them the choice. Yeah, it is. It's super important for them to get all sources from nutrition in this age. And I don't think, as you said, it's not good to be extreme in any way, but I also know from a lot of, you know, scientists out there, because I'm very much into that as well, nutrition. And I just know that you need to get those, and you have to eat so much, you know, so many beans and stuff, or proteins from plant-based, that you cannot even
to make up for it if you cut out entirely meat.
Exactly. Yeah. But I don't know, like, it's a really long discussion and opinions. I'm quite fascinated by it. Yeah. But I mean, we have question over there.
Yes. Hi, my name is Alicia. I'm also from the CBS Fashion Society. And recently, Virgil Abloh made a comment about streetwear dying recently, and as kind of trendsetters and looking and being an inspiration for a lot of people in style. Do you think that it's going to completely die or evolve, or like, what's your...
Do you mean street style or streetwear?
Like this extreme athletic...
Streetwear. Okay. Yeah.
He said that? I didn't hear him say that. Wow.
Yeah, it was, wow. I believe, in one of the Business of Fashion, what he said, the exaggerated streetwear would kind of die out with time.
I think that he might mean exaggerated, like the huge sneakers that we've been seeing around for a while now. But if you think about athletic wear, or even like Americana sportswear, that actually dates back to the 90s and way before. And I think that it can always be reinterpreted. You know, brands like Ralph Lauren are completely founded on that concept and then branched out into like evening wear and the rest of it. So I don't think that, I think fashion's really attached to streetwear. And that it'll come back in different forms.
I think too. But I think everything has their ups and downs. And of course, we've seen so much of it. And I recently spoke with a retailer that said that the whole hype about getting that certain sneaker and stuff is also going a bit down, because a lot of young kids are just buying, you know, the sneakers, then they wait 2 weeks for it to sell out, and then they sell it for the double price. And that's the way it turned into a business, and that kind of kills the business. So I think that's maybe, you know, I haven't read that piece either, but I just think, as everything else has its ups and downs, but I think we can all look into this room and see a lot of sneakers and stuff in here as well. I think it's become more like every person item, or what you say, like, it's allowed to wear the sneakers to the office, to the party, to everything. So, I mean, I don't know. It's a part of a must-have wardrobe item.
I agree. I don't see it changing anytime soon. But at the same time, I think, I don't know if he meant that in a way that it's like, you know, like, the king is dead, long live the king. Because I feel like he's also... not, I don't want to call it the problem, but like the reason like streetwear has gone
the
kind
hype.
Of like the hype. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like his whole brand is about that. And it's also like the Kardashian era and like all of that kind of.
Yeah. And I do see the younger, not like as young as your kids, but just the little cousins, you know, my husband's little cousins who are like 20, they are obsessed with certain sneakers. Mm. And I don't remember, I mean, I'm sure I was obsessed with something else, but the amount of pocket money that,
yeah,
is,
I know,
that they are willing,
that's
to
what
put
I mean,
into this.
That's,
it's
what I
a
mean.
Hype,
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
And I won't be that upset if that goes away. Although it will probably be replaced by something else.
I'm sure it will, like everything else.
Hi, my name is Hanny. I think, I don't know if this is a question or more something you should discuss. I think sustainability in fashion sometimes seems more seclusive than inclusive. Like, I wouldn't say rich people, but for people who have more, do you know what I mean? Like, definitely, it's definitely, we know, everybody knows now, we can't do the plastic bags everywhere.
Everybody in Scandinavia knows that.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. France too, I think. But I don't know if you can discuss like the part about it being more, I don't know if, have a feeling that it's more seclusive than inclusive, especially in fashion.
That is a really good point, and we have spoken, we've tried to speak to this a few times on the podcast, the fact that it is, you know, sustainability does get accused of being a luxury of the wealthy, and it is, you know, there is some weight to that accusation, and the problem is, there is no answer to that right now. I mean, there are efforts that we can all make. There are high street brands that are obviously trying to change the way they function, but then they get accused of greenwashing. And I don't think we should just write it off as a complete impossibility that more affordable brands be able to turn themselves into sustainable brands. But I think it's a longer journey and it involves a heck of a lot of effort. Yeah. I don't know what you guys think about this.
It is also, it is a problem as a lot of the brands are struggling with every time they try to make it more sustainable, the prices gets higher. Yeah. And then there's these people that actually, as you say, have them can afford it. So, but then again, looking at, the younger generation and my kids, we go and buy, vintage toys as well. Like, we can start in other places where you can kind of think it in as not only for the wealthy people, but also for, like, the majority. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's the small things that can, you can also go in and make a change in that.
Mm. And I think, right? If it is, what I was saying before, we are voting with our wallet. Maybe it is the people who have more money who need to make the big, because if they are the ones spending the most and who... It probably is the case that the people buying the more things are the ones who have more money to more disposable income. So then why should the onus not be on them, you know? And often I think the problem comes from also patterns of consumerism where young people see people our age buying lots of things and therefore want lots of things. So then they go to Zara or Primark and buy things to copy us. So if we're also leading by example and buying less and reusing and showing that we're more able to, mix and match in our own wardrobes and not constantly promote new trends and new things and make other younger people or people who can afford less, because obviously there are the people that can't afford anything, and we're not even going to put them in the equation, because that's it, if they all they can do is get like a pair of shoes for their children that is like at a low price point, that should be their right as well. I'm talking about the people who have the disposable income, even if it's not a very big one, and who choose, instead of going to buy something from a brand that's a nice eco-conscious brand, who prefer to go to Primark and buy six tops instead of one. And that's the pattern that we want to try and change. Because unfortunately, and this is what Pernilla said before, this is something that our generation grew up with, this idea that we're entitled to lots of stuff. It didn't happen before us. Our grandparents and our parents didn't have lots of things. Exactly. They had very few things that they wore to death, repaired them and it was us, we were given shit ton of choice. We got affordable things. It didn't exist before. Before, you had to save up for everything. And we have, it's our generation that have done this. We have created this desire for lots and lots of things, and we have to drum it out of ourselves. And by the way, it doesn't make us happier. Having all this stuff at home doesn't make us feel like better people at all. On the contrary, and that's something that marketing and advertising and all these things have convinced us, and we have internalized all of that, and we need to unlearn all of that. And that is something that, as Pernilla says, we can teach our children, but we have to be so aware of it, because it's now become such, it's almost like I'm allowed to have this. I've earned it. Why shouldn't I be allowed? People say that to me. Why shouldn't I be allowed to buy like these three things? Because you don't need them. And you just have to unlearn what you think you're entitled to, because you're not entitled to it. You don't need all of that.
And we should be the first. I'm the first to say
and
mea culpa.
I'm speaking for myself. Like, I entered the fashion industry quite a few years ago now. And literally when I was beginning in the industry, there was nothing I loved more than to shop, to buy new things, to try new trends, to be super inventive and experimental with my style. As I've grown older and as I've understood the impact on the planet, I've had to realize that I can't do that. And when I was growing up, I couldn't afford anything. My parents didn't give me any money. And so when I entered the industry, like, having access to all of this felt so lucky and overwhelming that I wanted it all. And then I realized that actually that's not okay. You have to also accept that we know much more now than we did back then, and we just have to change. And it's really difficult, because unfortunately fashion is beautiful and fun and says so much about ourselves, and it's so personal what you wear. So you also have to find the right balance in between, finding what works for you, but also not buying lots of things that are really just bad for the planet around us.
And the last thing that I would add to it, and I think, again, this is probably something that's very obvious in this country, but this is obviously going out to a lot of different people, is you say vote with your wallet, and I completely agree with that. But I also think vote with your vote.
Yeah.
Like young people who are so engaged in all of this, but then write off politics as corrupt and bullshit, which I completely understand. You know, you also need to involve yourself and have the party that's going to be creating regulation in your country or region around this. Because if you sit out of the political process, you're sitting out of the sustainability process. They go completely hand in hand. So that's my speech for today about that.
Good speech.
I think we're going to have to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But thank you so much, everyone, for coming. We hope that that was
fun and
interesting. Yeah, interesting.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thank you so much, Pernilla, and to all who joined us. But before we go, we managed to grab Cecily Thorsmark, the CEO of Copenhagen Fashion Week, to speak to us quickly about the big news that was announced this week. We're here with Cecilia Thorsmark, the CEO of Copenhagen Fashion Week, and you have just made a big announcement, haven't you?
We have indeed. So we spent the past year developing our sustainability action plan. We have the framework of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals as you know, the framework of our strategy and everything in a more long-term basis. But we decided that we needed like an actual and very concrete action plan with targets for the next 3 years. So that's what we launched last week in Copenhagen.
So what is it exactly for people who haven't seen the announcement?
So the plan lays out our targets for actually two parts of Copenhagen Fashion Week, and one is the actual event production. Super simple to say it in a frank way, but it's about event production and how we can lower the impact of that in terms of climate, in terms of resource consumption, and reducing our waste as well. It's about looking at the business model for our Fashion Week and some very concrete targets. For example, reducing our CO2 emissions by 50% over the next 3 years, and so forth. The more, I think the absolutely most essential part of the action plan is how we address the industry and how we take on a new role. So going from being like a traditional Fashion Week, an event, an umbrella organization organizing a Fashion Week and whatever that entails, to becoming a platform for driving change in the industry. So this second part of the action plan is about it's about several things, but the most important thing is about how we will introduce sustainability requirements for the brands that wish to have a show or presentation during Copenhagen Fashion Week.
So you can't get on schedule if you don't meet these requirements.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. That's great. That's from January 2023. free, and it's 17 minimum standards that you can download the action plan on our website and see which 17 minimum standards. They cover the entire supply chain, so it's a very holistic approach. Apart from that, it's also a point system where you have to earn a minimum amount of points in order to be able to get to be eligible to apply.
Amazing. And one last question. So this officially makes you guys the most sustainable fashion week in the world, right?
Well, you said it, Monica. Yeah. No.
But how are we going to encourage other fashion weeks in other cities to follow suit?
Yeah. I think that is the most important part of this work. I think if it's just Copenhagen Fashion Week that's setting minimum requirements for the industry, then obviously we're not going to make an impact globally, and we are in the middle of a climate crisis. So if this is to have results globally, then other fashion weeks should be doing it as well.
I have one last question. I'm curious, you said there were seven targets for the brands to meet to be able to
17.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I am wondering how many brands already fulfill those targets. I'm assuming most of them are going to have to change a lot of things within their business models.
Yeah, I mean, we've had both an advisory board and also a panel of experts, as well as our board of directors advising on the action plan. And I've been, discussing the ambition level actually first and foremost, because I think it's very essential that if you put out 17 minimum standards that will go into effect in 3 years from now, then obviously they need to be super ambitious, which they are. But we also need to be at a level where the industry can sense that this is doable. Yeah. I mean, if we really want, to come on board and to embark on the sustainable transition of our company, then, these 17 minimum standards, they do not frighten us. And we're not going to, turn our back on Copenhagen Fashion Week or turn our back on sustainability in general. We can do this. So I think we found a good level. Right. I hope we did. And without being over ambitious, but very ambitious.
This is so exciting.
Thank you so much for speaking to us, Cecily, during such a busy time for you. And congratulations.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's all for today, folks. A big thank you to Pernilla and Cecily for joining us. And once again, to Vestiaire Collective for making this event happen. If you've got cool designer threads sitting at the back of your wardrobe that you haven't worn in like a year or 2 years, this is probably a sign you're never going to wear them again. So hit up Vestiaire, guys. You'll never look back. Oh, and if you love us, show us the love. Please rate and review us on iTunes. It means so much. Until next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.